The September 12th, 2017 Board of Adjustment meeting will come to order. Will the court liaison call the roll, please?
Here.
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 Here. Here.
Thank you, sir. Is there any discussion regarding the agenda?
Move to approve.
Second.
I have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those in favor opposed say nay. Have an approved agenda. July 12th, 2017 minutes were distributed to the members of the board. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes?
Approve.
Second.
To approve in a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 I think the building opposes it.
All those opposed say nay.
Quickly.
Will the court reporter swear in to staff, please?
Yes, I do.
Case number 1950. Notice is hereby given that the Board of Adjustment of the City of Columbia, Missouri will hold a public hearing at a meeting of said board in the Council Chamber of City Hall, 701 East Broadway, Columbia, Missouri, 7 p.m., Tuesday, the 12th day of September, 2017, to give all interested parties an opportunity to appear and be heard in relation to the following appeal. Appeal of Gary and Patricia Kespool from the decision by said city's building regulation supervisor to deny the issuance of a freestanding sign permit on real estate in the City of Columbia, County of Boone, State of Missouri, hereinafter described, requesting that said board grant a variance to permit the construction of a freestanding sign in the M-TD mixed-use downtown district, which is not permitted per section 29.4.8, table 4.8-8 of the Unified Development Code. Said real estate known as or located at 1103 Walnut Street. Has the notice been properly advertised?
Yes, it has.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes, it has.
Have the parties in interest been notified?
Yes, they have.
Have there been any inquiries?
No, there have not.
Sure. Will the person making the application please come forward and state their name and address and be sworn in?
Gary Kespool, 2215 South Country Club Drive.
Kespool.
First of all, let me thank you folks for volunteering to serve on city board. I have a fond appreciation of a lot of people who've done served on boards. I've done it myself, and I know what a time-consuming process it is, so I appreciate your service. My wife Patty and I purchased this property in December of 1990. Shortly after purchase, the reason for the purchase was to move my company there, which we did. There were three tenants: my company, Chinnis Architectural Associates, and Alive in Christ Lutheran Church had a church office there that I donated to them. The building site, the actual building itself, is about 100 to 110 feet back from the sidewalk on Walnut Street. In front of the building is a 20-space parking lot that is for our customers and clients. Over the years, it has attracted other tenants to the building, mainly because of the downtown location and the parking. 3 or 4 years ago, a new multi-story apartment building was constructed on the corner of Walnut and Orr Street next door to the property. The new building was built from the front lot line to the back lot line and side-to-side property lines, encompassing the entire lot. Tenants of 1103 East Walnut, my building, have voiced their concerns that shoppers and clients cannot find our location because of the sight lines to our building when driving down Walnut from the east or the west. That building is so overpowering, you have to get in front of our building before you can see any tenant sign, which are on the building. I therefore submit an application for sign permit to the Community Development Department, which was denied. I am now asking for a variance from the Board of Adjustment to approve this request. The sign would be designed to be a low-profile, 3.5-foot-tall sign to be located in the first parking space on the southeast corner of our lot. You have an attachment showing the dimensions of that sign and where it would be. The low-profile nature of the sign will not impede the sightline of motorists exiting or entering our parking lot. We believe the sign will not detract from the setting in the neighborhood. It will allow motorists to be able to see tenants' names occupying our building from a distance away and aid in traffic flow. They won't be slowing down when they get to our driveway to read the signs. Included in your packet is a unanimous letter of the recommendation from the Downtown Community Improvement District Board of Directors. We made a presentation to them on June 15th, 2017, and they unanimously approved, gave their approval for the sign. Neighboring property owners, Mark C. Stevenson, who is here to the east of us, Dave Parmley to the southeast, and Dick Ditter to the southwest, all agree with the allowing the variance. I hope you will understand the difficulty of the overshadowing of our business by the new development and approve this request for the continuing of commerce in the downtown area. Anyone have any questions of me?
Questions?
The sign will not be lighted. I haven't decided whether to make a dark bracket background with white letters or a white background with dark letters, but it will be pretty much maintenance free. We'll be able to change the tenant's sign. There'll be six of them facing two directions, and we'll be able to interchange those signs whenever we need to. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak in favor?
Give your name and address.
Mark Stevenson, 3212 Shoreside Drive, Columbia, Missouri.
Now the clerk will.
Gary's right. I have the property to the east of his, and I bought it with a partner and a friend back in 1976. And 2 years later, he needed to move, so I bought out his half. And Gary bought his about 1990, I think he said. So we've been neighbors for almost 30 years. Haven't had any problems whatsoever. I think the sign will help people find it. I've looked at the safety issues. I have a driveway next to his property, and because of the height of the sign, the angle, I don't think there'd be any problems, you know, people safely pulling in and out of my driveway. Extra thing, I think Columbia ought to be more business friendly. Sometimes you talk about declining sales tax revenues and increasing demands on the budget, and I think if you can have a successful business in Columbia, I think that's great. Sign will help his businesses and the ones in his opposition. I'm in favor of it.
Thank you. Tidewater Drive, Columbia, Missouri. Thank you for hearing us out this evening. Again, my name is Steve Wilson. I am one of the attorneys that is a tenant in Mr. Kespel's building at 1103 East Walnut with Murray Law Firm. I think that the signage that Gary has proposed and that I think all of the tenants in the building are asking for a variance to approve would be a dramatic help to our business. As an example, at least on a weekly basis, we have prospective clients who have called our office and have even been given directions on how to get there and still call back asking where our office is and that they've missed it and they're driving around on Walnut Street or they've reached College Avenue and are having a difficult time finding our office because they've passed that the Orr Street Lofts building there at the corner of Orr and Walnut that's, I think, a four-story building that runs right up to the setback line at the sidewalk, and they have difficulty seeing it. By the time they get to a location where they would be able to see our office and see the signage, they've already passed it and are looking around and miss it. And it's a common occurrence for us, probably at least on a weekly basis. We have a circumstance where, like I said, someone that's not even necessarily just looking randomly for an office, but they've been they've contacted us, made an appointment, and been given directions and instructions on how to get to our office and where it's located, and they still miss it because of the setback and not being able to see it due to the building next door. So I think it would be a great benefit to both us and to the other businesses there who may rely even more on foot traffic. You know, most of the people that come to our office are probably clients that have called us and scheduled appointments ahead of time. We do have walk-ins, but there are other businesses there that also would rely on people being able to see the presence of their business on Walnut Street, the mudroom that's there, and the computer repair store that's there. And I think they would benefit greatly from it as well, being able to have passing motorists be able to see without having to look back at a building and possibly cause traffic problems, like Mr. Kespel said, slowing down or stopping to try to get a look at the signs and what businesses are there. And I do believe that the sign that's been proposed and the height would be safer to have that sign located there than have the vehicles that routinely park there, you know, whether it's a truck or a van or an SUV, for traffic that's leaving the parking lot with a large vehicle parked in those last spots. It is difficult to see traffic coming up and down Walnut Street, and I think having a smaller sign there that keeps traffic and keeps vehicles out of that parking spot would also make it safer for traffic that are exiting and entering the parking lot. So that's all I have. Do you have any questions at all? Sure. When wishing to speak in opposition? Seeing none. Close the public hearing. Comments of staff?
Well, you have heard the testimony here before you this evening, and staff will point out as facts of the case. This particular site, 1103, is unique within our downtown where it does provide on-site parking forward of the existing building. The area has undergone redevelopment with the Orr Street Lofts being built in compliance with our zoning regulations, meaning that it was allowed to be built to all property boundaries within our C2, the C2 zoning district. That has obviously created a situation from what was previously there to what is there today. Freestanding signage is not by the sign standards for downtown, which is unique to the rest of our sign standards throughout the city of Columbia, does not acknowledge freestanding signage. By omission, it is not permitted. And therefore, that is why this application is before you this evening. While I make that statement, it is not 100% ironclad. There are freestanding signs within the downtown, one of which is where the sub shop is located on 9th, if I am correct, 8th or 9th, which is also a similarly situated building with parking forward of the principal structure. That sign obviously predates our current sign standards for the downtown. It would be considered a legal non-conforming sign, and it would be allowed to be repaired and maintained in its current condition should that situation arise. Our downtown standards have recently undergone major change with the adoption of our new Unified Development Code, where we do have a greater focus on aesthetic and architectural treatment. The site is unique in its characteristics, being blocked by a new building built under what would be today our required architectural design requirements of pulling the building up to what is referred to as the required building line, meaning you are, in essence, building 2 feet from the defined property line of the lot. The condition would exist if this building were to have not been built several years ago, but being built under today's code. There are requirements, should the board feel that the applicant has made their case, that would need to be considered as part of a board order if an approval is in your mindset. One is that a freestanding sign that is to be located on an interior lot per the sign code anywhere else under our general provisions within our zoning code must be set back from the side property line a minimum of 25% of the lot width. This is approximately a 64-foot wide lot, which is consistent with the two bays of parking that you see and a center drive aisle, meaning that the side yard setback from the proposed location, which is on the east side of the subject site, would need to be 16 feet from that side yard property line. Furthermore, in order to ensure that site visibility at the entry to the parking area is not obstructed, a site triangle would need to be maintained, and that generally is accomplished by setting a sign back from the public right-of-way a minimum of 10 feet. The advertisement for this particular Board of Adjustment action was very broad. It is specifically indicating that we are seeking a variance on the permission of a freestanding sign in the MDT zoning district due to its exclusion out of the freestanding sign table of our sign ordinance. That does not preclude the board from being able to consider adjustments to the setbacks that I have just indicated to you. That would be allowed based on the broad nature of this advertising. Those are the facts associated with the case. Staff has no opinion as it relates to this particular application. That is for the board to render its own decision upon.
Comments legal?
Just a few housekeeping things. We have some exhibits to admit into the record, so we have a clean record. If the board will allow, we'd like to submit ordinance number 29-4.8, 29-6.1, 29-6.4 as exhibits 1, 2, and 3.
So allowed.
And on top of that, we'd also like to seek to admit the application and letter of support, which was provided with the notice, as exhibit 4, and the permit application and denial letter as exhibit 5.
Allowed. Case also. Numbers.
Okay, so with that said, beyond that, I would simply remind the board that under 29-6.4, there are specific criteria that the board must find in order to grant a variance, since this is a signed variance, which potentially could have a setback provision. There is an additional criteria that the board must satisfy in order to grant any variance. I'm happy to read those aloud if you'd like. They are in your packet, listed under subsection 2 of 29-6.4.
Comments from the board?
So you mentioned the setbacks. So does this proposal, this variance, meet those setbacks?
Based upon the graphic that was supplied by the applicant, it would appear as it does not. That front parking space, a standard parking space, is roughly 9 feet. The actual proposed sign is to be placed somewhere within that front parking space, obviously less than the required 10 from the road right-of-way. And the design of the sign that was proposed as part of the application packet for the sign itself is what we would refer to as a wing sign. It has two angled components that would read to the Walnut Street right-of-way coming from a central pivot point, and not a standard single sign structure that would have two sides facing either, reading from either direction the same information. Given the wing and the expansion of the sign to have the two angled sign faces, it may not fit 16 feet from the property line either before it reaches the drive aisle, depending on the width of the actual sign structure as a whole. Given our evaluation of what the sign structure may need to be, it may need to, instead of being an angled sign, should the board again determine that a hardship has been met, may need to go to a single standard two-sided, readable from two sides, single structure instead of two structures. That A would reduce the total amount of sign area as we calculate it, and B would conserve on the amount of space that you'd have to come out in that parking space. Standard parking space within our code is required to be roughly 9 by 18. So thinking that you have a 64-foot wide parcel, you have an 18-foot wide stall, or 18-foot deep stall on the east side, a 24-foot wide aisle, and then another 18-foot stall on the opposite side, on the west side next to the Orr Street building. That is how you get to your 64 feet. If the board were to determine that a variance is appropriate, you're going to have to render a decision as to what that side yard setback should be. Should it be half of the distance of what would be required, which is the 16 feet or some other number, and do you want to reduce the required setback from the road right-of-way? The sidewalk that is there along Walnut today, obviously you're going to have a setback with the sidewalk there. It's a standard 5-plus-foot sidewalk, roughly. And that is going to be normally within the public road right-of-way at this particular location, normally 1 foot or so in, probably from the rear, from the property line into the right-of-way. So you may have 5-6 feet from the actual back of curb to the back of the right-of-way, and then you would have the additional 9 feet. I think what Mr. Kespel's application is seeking is to have that sign placed as close to the back of the sidewalk as possible, hence the height, so it's not reducing the site visibility coming out. But it's the side yard setback that we may need to pull it from. Parcels adjacent to this, to the east, are zoned MOF, which is our new office zoning district. That would be Mr. Stevenson's property. And then, of course, the property that is immediately to the west, which is Orr Street Studios, is zoned MDT, which is what the Kespel's property is zoned as well. The MOF zoning district does have a setback requirement for structures on it from the adjacent MDT zoning. So you're going to have some space between whatever may be reconstructed on the MOF property and what would be potentially able to be reconstructed on the MDD property of Mr. Kespel. So you just have to weigh that into your consideration as to what do you want to do with the 16-foot side yard setback and the 10-foot front yard setback, given the other physical features that are there. Right now, though, the sign diagram does not comply with those standards. The sign diagram is not done to that dimension scale either at this point. It was a general application for a freestanding sign in the MDT district, which is what was denied. We didn't go any further to evaluate the exhibit that Mr. Kespel submitted as to the location of the sign, because we stopped at the fact that you couldn't have a freestanding sign in the MDT to begin with. And that's when we started to prepare for this evening's meeting. We identified, okay, we're looking at the graphic that he's given, the proposed sign that he wants. Here's the other standards that are going to need to be addressed if the board considers favorably for this freestanding sign.
So if we just approve a variance, he gave a general ask for the variance. If we approve that, then it's up to him to do whatever he wants, and there's nothing that requires us to set any other standards. Is that correct?
That would be correct. 16 feet from the property line, in essence, would basically be almost at the edge of the parking stall internal. And then 10 feet back would be not only the first parking stall would be lost, the second parking, a port of the second parking stall would be lost as well.
I think the sign as designed, it would have to start 16 foot from the property line, and then it
yes.
would probably extend into the driveway.
Yeah, it would.
That is correct.
Correct.
As and that, I think what Ms. Hammond's point is if you only approve the request for allowing a freestanding sign, Mr. Kesspool will need to make a decision. Does he want the winged sign with the two angled faces, or does he want a single sign structure that reads from two different sides
but
is perpendicular to the property line?
He could place that sign, and it could comply with the side setback, but I don't believe it would comply with the front setback.
Not in the location that he would like it at to read before you pass the
Correct.
Building at Orr Street Studios. He would have to pull it closer is what I would believe would need to be, is what would be required.
Not sure how comfortable I feel in designing something that. I mean, I know you do that for a business, but you do that in your office.
Right.
Well,
I have a couple questions for Mr. Kesspool. Come back up, please.
Sure.
You were proposing a triangular-shaped sign.
A wing shape.
Sign.
Mm-hmm.
What are, do you roughly know the dimensions of those signs, how far it is in the back?
There's seven, the signs are 7 feet long. That was my compromise. If I shorten those to 5 feet, that brings the sign back away from the curb because the wings aren't so long. And it would set back further off the street, which sounds like what part of the issue is. It would also help in the side setback. But I can't get 16 feet. If I go 18 feet, I'm in the
driveway. That's almost the whole parking space.
With a wing sign, I can't even put a straight sign up and do that. So the compromise is if I bring it back to 5, I will bring it back to 5 feet rather than 6, that will bring it back to the north, away from the sidewalk. It will also help the side setback a little bit because the wings won't have to be spread out so far. They can be more, which will help.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So did you, this design is, did you look at other designs and discard them? Why not a facing sign that faces east and west and people see them that way?
Well, I was a little concerned about blocking traffic with that sign.
Because you...
And the wing design was so they could see it from both sides, the same as the two-sided sign.
You could see it from both sides, and you could have it be a little bit longer that way so you could keep it with the wing sign.
I tested 3.5 feet in my car, and you can see over it. You can see over 3.5 feet.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
And it won't be
if
any
you, if you had a straight back sign, you couldn't go quite as long with it.
Right. You could have
easily.
A little longer sign, right? And some of the attorneys especially have long names. We have two attorneys in the building, two different offices, and their names are pretty long. I think we can get those names on a 5 foot, on a 60-inch sign
triangle.
Easily also rather than 72, which will help the setback both ways.
I can't do the math in my head, but if you go to 5 foot, is it going to be roughly 7 foot in the back?
5 is 25, 25, 50, it'd be, yes, 7 is 49.
And the parking lane's 18 feet,
and
so?
The 7 foot one would be 10.
I think my parking stalls are 10 feet, Tim. I think I made them bigger.
If it's
10 feet wide?
I think my parking stalls 10
Built
feet wide.
Built at 90.
I don't like the bang doors.
Anything other than 90, I can't do that.
Is it going to be a 90 degrees?
No.
Or less?
It'll be less than 90.
Okay, so that makes it.
The more you bring it in,
right.
the more space it takes.
Just trying to figure out how much side yard.
Pardon me?
I'm trying to figure out what to do with the side yard.
How much side yard setback to specify?
Still get it to keep it inside the parking stall. Trying to do a little bit of math.
I think that's why Mark is here. He's not concerned about the sign interfering with his property line.
I know he's not, but we are.
Because of the code, I understand. Right. But that's why Mark's here, because.
Sir, we can't do that. Thank you.
Be careful
with the
speed.
That it?
Okay. Thank you, sir.
So is that parking space all the way to the property line, side property line?
Based on my site investigation, yes.
Okay. And the parking space is how far from the right-of-way?
It's on it near as I know.
It is, yeah. The front parking space is the coincidental, the what would be the southerly edge of that first parking space is coincidental with the right-of-way line.
Okay.
Approximately 1 foot back from
the sidewalk.
The sidewalk.
Okay.
About 6 feet probably from the back of the curb.
All right.
Mr. Kespel, could you come up and answer one more question, please?
Yeah.
Maybe two. There's already a freestanding sign in the southwest corner of your property.
It is a, what do they call those? Cafeteria board or
sandwich board. Sandwich board sign?
Sandwich board, removable. And it's directional because it has an arrow on it.
And is there plans for that to go away?
It'll be gone. It'll take the place of that sign.
Okay, because I want to frame that.
Her name will be on that sign. She'll take that down. I put that up for her for the mudroom.
The whole pole and sign, everything's going to go away with the new sign.
Oh, now you're talking about two different places. On the southeast corner is a sandwich board sign that she takes down. Supposed to take down every night.
In the southwest corner, there's a pole.
The pole sign, yes.
The white backing in it. That's your sign.
That was there when I bought the building.
Are there plans for that to be removed with construction of a new sign?
If I get a new sign up on the, I'm asking for, I will take that sign down.
Okay, because that's what I want to frame this in our decision. Thank you. Any other further discussion, members?
I don't think so.
So how did you calculate we should frame this?
I'm thinking of that out right now. Anyone have any suggestions?
So my calculations, even by 6 foot sign, is only like 8.5 feet long.
No, personally,
for the hypotenuse.
Okay.
If it were a right triangle, so. We're not asking
what we
for
have
that.
To put in it.
That's what we're trying to get settled tonight is to.
Okay.
Center said we're perfectly within our purview to do that tonight.
To change it. That's what
yes.
I'm just trying to discuss this.
Because they left the notice open enough to allow us, the board,
and I'm
to make these decisions.
You, it does not seem that are you thinking that sign could be placed to meet a 10-foot?
No.
No.
It cannot.
No.
It will not.
That was my question. I don't see how it could either.
No, we have to.
It'd be in the second parking space.
Board members, just so I'm catching up with everybody, are you guys also considering granting a variance to basically the setback provision or to the side setback?
What
am I wrong on that?
What I heard Mr. Zenner say was that
front
we
and
could
side.
Grant the variance for the sign with provisions.
Okay, I would just want to make sure, just to cover our bases, make sure that Mr. Kespel is comfortable with expanding the variance request and include those requests as well.
The
Okay. Okay. So I will take that as a yes, that he is requesting. Okay. So that way the judgment is within the scope of what you're actually asking for.
While they're figuring that out, can I ask you a question? Why, if he's asking for a variance, why didn't staff not require the variance to include a side yard and a front yard? What if we only approved a variance for a sign? Then he's left not knowing how to meet.
Because they're here to tell us that we can't do it that way.
I'll let Pat speak for himself, but I will say that ultimately the application for a variance is up to the applicant himself or herself to make. Obviously, staff will work with them as much as possible, so I'll let Pat speak for them. But
so if we had only
generally, he gets to control his application.
So if we had just if we just approve a variance of a sign, he might have to come back for another variance for the side yard or the front yard.
That'd be correct. Or he would have redesigned the sign to fit into the parameters of the code. When staff evaluated the application in and of itself, the stated section that he was denied on was for section 29-4.8, which is freestanding signage specific to Table 4.8-8, which the omission of a freestanding sign in the MDT district was the basis for the denial letter. That was what the application was. However, we are talking 29-4.8 is the sign ordinance as a whole. And the broadness of referencing just the section of the code in which the variance is sought from with greater clarification as to what table is why you are where you're at, having the freedom in this advertisement, provided the applicant consents to the broadening of that request, to make this decision in one combined action. That decision still lies with the board. You could read it narrowly, as was what the applicant asked for, just the freestanding sign per table 4.8-8, or read it more broadly as a variance to the requirements of 29-4.8, which is the entire sign ordinance.
And which the applicant has consented to today.
I think I have a motion to run this by you first, make sure we have all the pieces and parts in place. Motion to approve a variance to permit the construction of a freestanding sign with the condition of a 10-foot side yard setback and a 2-foot
front yard
setback, and that the existing sign in the southwest corner of the property be
the pole sign
be decommissioned and tore down before a sign permit is issued.
Unless the applicant wants to include that as a term, I would advise against adding that additional condition in the judgment. Keep it just to what you want the variance to be.
If that's Mr. Chairman, advice, I will take it.
Chairman, do you want to specify the maximum height of that sign as defined within the application, which was 3.5 feet?
And 3.5 feet?
That, if I am correct, that is what Mr. Kespel had indicated.
3.5 feet from what?
Height.
Right.
Height of the sign to be no greater than 3.5 feet.
From the sidewalk elevation.
That'll work for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right.
So does the pole sign, with the freestanding sign, would the pole sign be legal? I know he said he's going to remove it, but if we take it out of this,
it's already not legal.
It's already a non.
It's a non-conforming use.
Yeah, it's a non-conforming use.
Could it stay if he?
The location of that sign in relationship to the Orr Street Studios building is dysfunctional because it no longer has a west face that's readable, and it is actually behind the face of the Orr Street Studio building. So it is, it in essence is an obsolete sign that does not work. The applicant has not stated anything in his application that he consented to or desired to remove that sign. You've received legal advice that probably needing to leave it out, and let's just focus on the request at hand. If he should take it down, we all resolve the problem. He's really, it is a non-functional sign, and to come back in as an existing non-conformity, to reface just one side of it, I don't believe would be acceptable under our code. You'd have to make the sign readable. You'd have to repair the sign entirely.
My only thought on that, by bringing that, was just to clean it up.
Yeah,
that's the only reason why, and I'm more than happy to retract that.
Mr. Kespol has agreed to take the sign down, and it sounds like at least some of the commissioners like the idea of the sign going away. Is there anything that we can do to kind of codify this agreement?
I think we have legal advice to exclude it, in which I'm good with.
I'm good with a man's word, too.
That's good enough for me.
All right. Okay. So let's reaffirm this. Motion to grant the variance to permit the construction of a freestanding sign at...
Do we want to specify that it's a wing sign? Okay. That was a question.
Located at 1103 East Walnut in the southeast corner of the property, condition of a 10-foot side yard setback and a 2-foot front yard setback with a maximum height of 3.5 feet above the sidewalk.
I second that.
I have a second. Okay. Let's see where I'm at. will the court liaison or the board liaison please call the roll on the motion?
On the motion on case number 1950, Ms. Hammond?
Yes.
Mr. Carroz?
Yes.
Ms. John?
Yes.
Mr. Waters?
Yes.
Mr. Clitheroe?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously, 5-0 vote.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I appreciate
you all. All right.
No, we have another case.
All right. Case number 1951. Notice is hereby given that the Board of Adjustment of the City of Columbia, Missouri will hold a public hearing at meeting of said board in the council chamber of City Hall at 701 East Broadway in Columbia, Missouri at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, the 12th day of September, to give all interested persons an opportunity to appear and be heard in relation to the following appeal. The appeal of McGarry Properties, LLC and the McGarry Family Trust, represented by James Powell, from the decision by said city's senior planner to deny the approval of a subdivision plat on the real estate in the City of Columbia, County of Boone, State of Missouri, hereinafter described, requesting that the board grant a variance to permit the creation of lots containing a minimum lot area of no less than 0.5 acres within the A District Agricultural District, which is not permitted per section 29-2.2C2 of the Unified Development Code. Said real estate being or known as located at 4301, 4303, 4305, and 4217 St. Charles Road. Has the has the notice been properly advertised?
Yes, it has.
Has the property been posted with a notice of public hearing?
Yes, it has.
The parties in interest, have the parties in interest been notified?
Yes, they have.
Have there been any inquiries?
No, there have not.
Sir, will the person making the application please come forward and state your name and address and be sworn in?
My name is James M. Powell. I'm an attorney practicing law at 601 East Broadway here in Columbia.
Swear to affirm. I appear here this evening on behalf of the applicants, McGarry Properties, LLC, which is a Missouri limited liability company, which owns a part of the real estate in question, and McGarry Family Trust, which owns the remainder of the property. Also present on behalf of the applicants are Terry McGarry, Linda McGarry, and Deidre McGarry, who are the principals of McGarry Properties, LLC, and Terry and Linda McGarry are the trustees and beneficiaries of the McGarry Family Trust. The applicants are the owners of the property, which is located in the agricultural zoning district. It's located at 4217, 4301, 4303, and 4305 St. Charles Road. The applicant is seeking a variance to allow the creation of lots containing a minimum lot area of no less than one half of an acre in the A agricultural district. The city plans reviewer has denied the applicant's building permit application due to the lot sizes. The applicant requests that the board grant a variance to the creation of lots, to allow the creation of lots containing a minimum lot area of no less than one half of an acre in the A district. And to speak further toward this is Kevin Murphy of a civil group.
Name and address and be sworn in.
Certainly. Kevin Murphy with A Civil Group, offices at 3401 Broadway Business Park Court. Again, here for the McGarrys, who have had this property in their family since early 1971. This property was formerly in the county and annexed in 1969. And when the McGarry's parents purchased this property, or the majority of the property, there's a portion in the southwest corner that they then acquired in the 1980s. And Linda and Terry McGarry built a house on this portion of the property in 1989. And at that time, they had subdivided that lot and created that a subdivision lot for that. What they're trying to do at this point is to do some house cleaning on properties for their heirs in the future. They've done several improvements over the years and spent money on improving the property, including paving the shared driveway that goes through here when that was not required. They put in a $33,000 step sewer system that was not required over the years. I believe that was in 2009. So they've invested in the property for the betterment of the neighborhood. Again, this property was annexed as A1, and they've enjoyed the use of this property as A1 zoning. And up until recently, when the UDC code supplemented or former subdivision zoning codes and some other codes, single-family residential lots were allowed on a 7,000 square foot lot. So that's like an eighth of an acre. So what they're asking here is for a half acre size lot size to basically again clean up what is existing. This is a remnant tract that they're trying to turn into a legal subdivided lot. But again, it does not meet that 2.5 acre size. They have some other issues with the property, and also this lot with this existing house on it, and well, actually both of these other houses. This one is a subdivided lot. They're But they do want to rearrange some lot lines back here. There are other options for dealing with this. There's a possible rezoning to R1 that has its own issues as well. A1 zoning allows for two houses on a single lot if the lot sizes are over 2.5 acres. This lot here will have two houses, does currently have two houses, and will have two detached primary structures on it. That's a problem that would have to be addressed any which way. We felt that a Board of Adjustment variance, at least for this size of lot, allows us to proceed, and we would still have to address that two houses on one lot in the future, as it won't have house frontage. That's the idea that they have for that property, and again, have been enjoying that since the early 1970s. There's a house directly across the street on this is a another private drive. It also has two houses on a lot that's probably 8,000 square feet in size. These properties lie in an area outlined. Here's the subject properties, but an area in the city of 65 acres of A1 zoning. And they, again, would prefer not to rezone that to residential, and again, would have to have other problems to address with that. They're trying to do the house cleaning on this property in a reasonable I wouldn't say cheap, but at least in a financially sound way. Planned developments, this does not quite fit the new criteria for planned developments. Again, it doesn't fit R1 zoning quite either. The surrounding property, there is some R1 zoning that's never been developed, formerly A1 across the street in the city. But as you go down Richland and further to the south and east, plenty of, again, A1 zoning in a more of a rural type feel in this area. I think I have it this time. Be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. So I'm looking at a picture, and I'm not sure if it's the same as what you have, but so it shows like a lot outlined in red. Is that a lot already?
It's the sketch that
that was provided to you folks in the packet. Yes. There's one platted lot in there.
And that's the one outlined in red?
I've got a black and white copy. You might have to take a look, Mr. Cuthoro?
Yeah.
It's identified here as lot one, if that helps.
Lot one of McGarry subdivision.
Okay, so what? Then tell me about the green and the yellow and the blue.
That, Kevin, that's not a graphic that you have. That is a graphic that we, as a staff, prepared to help you understand the legal descriptions that comprise this application.
Oh.
So track one, track two, track three, and lot one of McGarry subdivision are what are represented on that document that you are looking at.
Pat, are you referring to the locator map that was attached to the agenda?
Yeah,
there's three tracts of land, so they're not legally subdivided, platted pieces of ground, and then one that has been. And what they're trying to do is to bring these other three lots into conformance. And there are certain variances we're going to have to get whichever process we go through. We felt that this was the path of least resistance. This is, again, these are tracts of land that they've enjoyed in this nature for many, many years. And they're just trying to clean house. And again, I think it's not only better for themselves, their neighbors, their future heirs, the city in general, to clean this up and create these legal lots.
So is the issue here that you only have one legal lot?
The issue is that they're zoned A1, and A1 zoning has changed. The definition of A1 zoning has changed from you used to be able to have a single family detached structure on a lot of 7,000 acres in size.
1,000 square feet.
Yes, and that's been removed, and now they require 2.5 acres for any ground zoned A1.
I understand that, but is there some reason why this can't just be a legal non-conforming lot in the A1 district?
That's what we thought as well. Potentially, if this lot, this tract that is set out in front, which is the one that we are now currently doing, and we will come back and rearrange these other ones in a future time, at a future date. If they were to sell that to get a building permit, it would be in question whether something could be built on that. With the plat that we had turned in for that one lot subdivision, all the lots, we have conceded that all of the lots will use access off of this private drive, and that will be maintained that way, that they wouldn't have any additional accesses onto St. Charles Road.
And the residential zoning does allow the lot sizes you want. But you said there were other issues with going that route.
Yes, we would still have to ask for variances for other items, and just to rezone is just another cost, and doing all of this house cleaning on this. Again, they've been zoned A1 since they've come into the city, and they've been able to enjoy that, and the uses that come with that. Actually, they feel that zoning to R1 is almost a down zoning. They're being an issue that I have personally is that in 25 plus years of doing this, I have never had to rezone a property because of a subdivision action, and that is now something that is a change. This is something we had been working on for some time, and the code just happened to change in the middle of it. So, again, we've spent time and effort on it, and this is one of the many paths that can be done to do it. And this is, again, what we feel is the path of least resistance in getting this accomplished.
Are you saying that if you get this variance, won't need to rezone in
Correct.
The future
Correct.
On any of this? Won't need more variances?
Potentially, when we do the issue of the two houses on one lot, which is something that we knew we were going to have to deal with regardless. So that sort of has been accounted for.
If this were rezoned, that would still be an issue?
That would still be an issue.
And what about the access?
The access, there is no issue with the access.
The driveways.
Right. No, this is actually what we had suggested with them, is that is preferable to city staff.
And is that why these are such oddly shaped requirements as they are now?
It was again at one point in time, as it's broken down, and prior to having subdivisions being created and this and that, and things were cut off either by deed description or by surveys that just met minimum survey requirements and not necessarily requirements of the city or the county or something of that nature. This is basically how they came out, yes.
And you didn't take this action before the new code was adopted because?
We started in January, and about in March.
It takes a while.
And again, we had discussed many different options, and I think even staff would say that there was, in doing a plan development, which would probably be the best thing to do, also the most costly thing to do, $25,000+, to do a plan that says, you know, shows everything, and this is what we're going to do. We didn't necessarily want to do that. That's how we originally proposed it or conceptually went to the city with it. And we thought that both the city staff and ourselves and our clients thought there were other ways that we can get around it. This is just one option of others. This is the least expensive and least it's a hardship anyway. We have got to get a variance one way or another, and to either do it through Board of Adjustments or, again, go the extra steps of going to planning and zoning and city council and everything else. This is what we chose to do.
Didn't go up to the August 10th P&Z meeting?
No. We had this issue kind of came back after we had turned in the plat and after we thought we had everything done. And that's when we realized it's hard to say, but I had to tell this to a lot of clients. You know, when the UDC was being revised and even, 400-plus-page document, but as I'm working, I know everybody else works as well, but didn't have time to dot every I and cross every T and to catch that. And it wasn't pointed out to us as well, so... Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak in favor of the applicant? Seeing none. Wishing to speak in opposition of the application? Close the public hearing. Comments of staff.
Had the applicant explain the rationale behind the application. Let me provide you some salient facts as they relate to the case at hand. Yes, there is only one legal lot out of the proposed four tracts of land that you have before you. That is lot one of the McGrary subdivision. It was formally approved as a subdivision plat with a flag lot going out to St. Charles Road. Yes. The site does have an improved driveway access that provides access to the remaining tracts of land. The locator map that you have before you does identify that track two, if I am correct, and that is the green tract that Mr. Clitheroe was referring to, goes over the flag or the stem portion of the McGrary Lot 1. So when that plat was recorded, we in essence isolated the southeast corner on its own lot created by default through a platting action that was legally sought and legally approved. So you ended up breaking up that one tract of land. It is a correct statement that these are survey tracts of land. And in our Unified Development Code, surveyed tracts of land that did not exist prior to annexation or prior to 1964 are not considered legal lots and therefore are not eligible to receive a building permit until they are created as legal lots, meaning that they must be platted. A one zoning district of our former Chapter 29, our zoning regulations, was converted from A1 to A in March of this year. That conversion also resulted in changing the minimum lot acreage for single-family residential development from the former 7,000 square feet in the A1 zoning district to a minimum 2.5-acre lot size requirement. The logic behind that was agricultural land preservation, and the inability or the desire to restrict the ability to parcel down an agricultural tract of land into a subdivision without going through a more deliberate subdivision action. And that is, one, to rezone to the R1 zoning district, thereby allowing an increased amount of density and thereby requiring formal subdivision plan submission and requisite construction plan submission for the appropriate infrastructure to support a more dense residential environment. Agricultural zoning districts generally are not viewed as having a significant impact upon the built environment and therefore do not have the same general level of subdivision improvement needs that a single-family residential subdivision may have. This is a unique situation that these parcels were previously, since 1969 upon their annexation, governed by the A1 zoning district and then converted, created as survey tracts through a series of activities built upon under then permissible county regulations or city regulations and allowed to develop the way that they are. Is that right? I don't have a real opinion on that. It happened before my time. I can tell you, though, it exists. Was the creation of Lot 1 of McCreary Subdivision an appropriate action? It met the requirements of our subdivision standards at the time. Therefore, I have to say, yes, it was. These are remnant parcels, as Mr. Murphy pointed out. This is a situation in which there will be additional platting standards that are going to need to be complied with. So the two issues, or the issue that you have at hand, one, is rendering a decision if the applicant has made a salient argument and a hardship that a variance to the minimum lot area of the A zoning district, which is a minimum 2.5 acres, is necessary. Mr. Murphy has been very correct in his statement that there are multiple options here. You can grant this variance, which is a shorter process. There is no question about that, 45 days from date of application to board rendering a decision. Or he could seek, on behalf of his client, should they not succeed here, a formal zoning action, which is roughly 8 to 10 weeks. It does cost significantly more money because it is based upon acreage. So there are financial implications associated with that, but that does not render then the other problem that exists should they choose to leave the two houses on the one rear lot that is a portion of Tract 1 and Tract 2. That would have to be either remedied through a platting action that would put one or both of those homes on individual lots meeting a reduced lot area, and therefore the half-acre lot size would accommodate breaking the two homes on the one proposed lot into two compliant lots if you approved a variance. If they rezoned, as Mr. Murphy pointed out, they would still have the same two homes on a lot less than 2.5 acres, or less than 7,000 square feet, or 7,000 square foot minimum lot size. Though they wouldn't have to seek a variance at that instance if they did rezone. They could, again, propose a subdivision plat and put them on lots of appropriate size and meeting the setback requirements and not have to come back for another variance. It's, in many respects, a decision that the board needs to weigh. Staff has an opinion associated with what they believe to be the more appropriate method. However, it's the board's decision to determine if the applicant has made a compelling case to authorize the lot reduction. Any way we look at this from a staff perspective, there's a platting action necessary. They will have to receive an authorization through what we refer to in our new design, our new regulations as a design adjustment to allow the private driveway to serve as the principal point of access and roadway frontage for the proposed lots. That would be handled at the Planning Commission and council levels as part of the platting action. That would not be a board issue. So that's one design adjustment that they would need to ask for, but given the current characteristics of that property, staff is not inclined to not support the usage of the private driveway as its means of ingress and egress, as that is how the property has been accessed for a significant period of time. The alternative to it would be to require that a public street be brought in to serve these lots in the future, which that is an exorbitant cost, which I think we as a staff would acknowledge. And what utility does that truly give us as a community? Not a whole lot in our opinion. Though, again, that's a decision for our Planning and Zoning Commission and Council to render upon the request. The issue, if they should choose to leave both homes on a single lot, that is what comes back to you at a later date. That concern was raised with the applicant prior to the advertising of this request. They chose to not proceed forward with that, wanting to first resolve the matter of reducing the minimum lot area through this body's purview. If they cannot achieve that, they would have to then proceed forward through a rezoning action, rezone the property, and then upon rezoning, there may be very limited reason to seek an additional variance for the two houses on a lot, unless it's the desire of the applicant to leave it that way, and at that point, the item would come back to you for consideration. But again, under the R1 zoning standards, then, and our standard subdivision requirements, it could potentially be difficult to truly state a hardship to have two homes on a single lot when, in fact, the zoning ordinance and the subdivision code allow you to create 7,000 square foot lots, which would easily accommodate either of those homes on the rear property. But that's speaking in the future without an application at hand. So you have before you multiple options that you could render a decision based upon. Minimum lot area, reduction, which is in the purview of the board, a denial of the request, and an option for the applicant to then seek to rezone the property, which would not be received negatively by city staff. It would fit into the broader context of the area, not the immediate context, which is generally rural A-zoned land, which has existed for quite some time. There is nothing, to my knowledge at this point, that has pending development in here that would start to change the characteristic of the surrounding property from a zoning action or a subdivision action perspective. We do have development to the southeast of this property off of Richland Road towards the intersections of Rolling Hills and Richland, which was all part of an annexation petition and a much more comprehensive plan district development approved several years ago, which is in the infancy stages of being able to be developed, but it is not directly influencing this context. That is the context that's just to the north of Old Hawthorne and then to the north of where the Elks Lodge is. That's all of that development that's moving up north from WW towards Rolling Hills. This particular area, based upon what I see from my other hat I wear with the Planning Commission, is really not seeing any other significant land use change. So the A zoning here is probably going to be here for a significant period of time unless development patterns and conditions change. I can answer any questions you may have. This is a crossover, not a normal item that you receive because it digs into the zoning code and the subdivision regulations more so than it does into the standard variance request you have on side yard setbacks and signage.
Comments illegal?
Just some housekeeping measures. Mr. Powell, I actually have copies of some exhibits that I'm going to seek to admit into evidence. Board members, at this time, we, the city staff, legal, would like to submit ordinance number 29-2.2, ordinance number 29-6.1, ordinance number 29-6.4 into the record as Exhibit 1, Exhibit 2, and Exhibit 3.
Granted.
In addition to that, we'd also like to admit into the record the locator map, which was previously provided in the agenda, the application for this variance, this appeal, and the denial letter that served as the basis for that application. We'd like to admit those as Exhibit 4, Exhibit 5, and Exhibit 6.
So granted.
Beyond that, my standard spiel here, I would like to remind the board that under 29-6.4, subsection 2, I believe that is, yes, under procedures. There are five elements for the general criteria that the board must find in order to grant an approval in this case. I'm happy to read those aloud if the board would like. If not, they are in the packet provided to you before.
Anyone need to hear those? Comments of the board? Questions?
Questions?
Okay.
So one, is this area included in the east area plan?
Yes, it is, ma'am.
Does this action have any bearing on that plan, or how does it relate to the plan?
The action would have a limited impact. This is still residential character, agricultural preservation. This is not an area that was identified in the plan as lying in the prime agricultural zone. This is a development identified area. So characteristically, we didn't identify specific densities on purpose. This would have been identified generally more as a residential redevelopment area. Had the Unified Development Code not changed the minimum lot area standards for the A1 zoning district from 7,000 square feet to the A zoning district of 2.5, it would have likely been consistent with the East Area Plan's recommendations and density. This particular area wasn't agriculturally significant to begin with, since it's already a developed portion of the overall acreage. So I would tell you that this action probably does nothing to impact the recommendations of the East Area Plan. If anything, if asked specifically, it probably supports what was envisioned when we dealt with the densities question in East Area, because it's containing, it ensures or would promote consistent densities and unified development of similar product. I mean, we have evolved from the East Area Plan to Columbia Imagined, which is our comprehensive plan for the city, which talks about integration of mixed housing types to create more livable and sustainable neighborhoods. This particular area has a decent mix of land use within it. If you come back around the curve going towards the hospital and Columbia Orthopedic and everything on, I'm drawing a blank on the road.
St. Charles.
St. Charles. As you come back around on St. Charles, but the road that connects WW back to the outer road, Keene, thank you, we end up with a mixture of residential product type as we head west, and then you end up with more significant single-family residential housing type as you move to the northeast with Eastgate and some of the other residential. This is probably a development that I would consider sandwiched properly within that general context as meeting the overall objective of a mixed density type of environment, a mixed housing product type. While it's not truly a mixed-use project, it is in that context of a much broader area. So from a comp plan perspective, an East Area Plan perspective, I don't think your action here, depending on what you do, will affect either outcome. I think it is consistent with both those documents. Again, the principal issue here is how do you reconcile what existed for the period of time from annexation to the change of the code to what now moves forward with the changed code, the minimum acreage requirements.
Question. So the two houses on the Tract 1 and Tract 2, if the variance is approved, does the applicant still need to rezone to approve a proposed subdivision plat?
If the variance is approved this evening, if you approve the minimum lot area variance, they will still have to seek subdivision plat approval. That's a given. Though the approval of a reduced lot area will allow our development staff to proceed forward with the plat that has currently been submitted for the southeast corner of the property, which shows a lot right now, less than 2.5 acres. I believe it is a 1.1-acre tract of land. That plat can proceed forward. There are a series of other design modifications for sidewalk and some right-of-way dedication, which, as Mr. Murphy was referring to, that's pretty standard for these types of infill parcels where we've got other requirements now, which will be handled again by both Planning and Zoning Commission as part of the planning action. Has nothing to do with your subdivision, nothing to do with the lot area. that would apply regardless if we left it as a 2.5 acre tract or if we approve it, if you approve a smaller lot area. So they'll be able to move forward with a platting action with our Planning and Zoning Commission and City Council, subject to the outcome of this, if you do not grant the variance. The subdivision platting action that is pending right now would need to be held back until a rezoning request were made, and then we would process the rezoning request, and we could process the subdivision platting action that is currently pending concurrently. Platting action would be subject to the rezoning being approved, which, again, from a staff perspective, given the context of this area and the nature of R1, we would likely have no opposition to the rezoning of A to R1.
Your original question there was, will they have to rezone?
Well, do they have to go to planning and zoning whether we go to yes. Give the variance or not? So if we deny the variance, they still have to go to planning and zoning, and they could rezone and do the subdivision plat at the same time.
And it would be a whole
at
lot.
No extra advertising or two advertisings and two hearings?
The items are, they follow two separate tracks within the Planning and Zoning Commission's procedural process. Zoning does have an application fee and an advertising fee. Application fee for the subdivision action has already been paid. There is no advertising associated with that. So you're looking at the fees that would be charged would be the advertising and our zoning fee to rezone. And then, of course, there is the 8 to 10 weeks that it's going to take to move that through. No additional charges on the subdivision plat would be assessed unless there were outstanding fees that had not been paid with the initial application. I do not have that file in front of me, so I can't tell you if all those fees were paid in full.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Comments?
They have to go to planning and zoning in any case. That will significantly clear up other things, the access.
The zoning action will have nothing to do with the platting issues. So the platting issues would be taken care of. Platting will take care of access, an access design modification, take care of sidewalk design modification. It will take care of right-of-way expansion on St. Charles Road as a design modification. All of that is packaged as part of their initial application fee for the subdivision approval. The subdivision plat that is currently pending is for one of the future lots. It is for that lot that is in the southeast corner of the property. The other property that is to the west of the driveway has not yet been submitted for final platting. That would come at a later date. So this action before the board this evening takes care of granting a lot area variance on all of the identified tracks. Track 1, Track 2, Track 3. The McGrary lot is currently a platted lot. However, through some of the replatting action of the adjoining parcels or the adjoining survey tracks to McGrary, there may be adjustments to the McGrary lot as well. And the minimum lot area that was identified as I understand it, to ensure that the parcel or the tract of land that has the two structures on it could be subdivided, if necessary, to accommodate each of those structures on their own individual lot. That is the smallest lot that could be created. The lots in general, though, will all probably be over 3/4 acre, if not larger, at the time of final platting when everything is said and done. Right now, though, the applicant, when the plat was submitted for the southeast corner, and there may still be, to our knowledge, there was and there may still be at this point, a pending purchaser for that lot. And that was the pressing issue as to why they wanted that one lot at that time platted so they could convey it. It was at that point that we had identified this lot area issue as a part of the plat review. Mr. Murphy made a comment, and it is a factual comment, When we held a concept review for the subdivision of this property, it was standard practice in all of our concept reviews that we held prior to the code changing that we alerted our applicants that there was a pending code change. We did not go to the length of explaining what every one of those code changes were and the impact to each of the individual applications that were before us at that point. We have gone back and we have reviewed our records, our concept review notes. Unfortunately, with this particular tract, there was not an indication given during that concept review that was recorded that there was a pending change that would affect the future subdivision. Had that been made, there may have been a more expeditious completion of the platting activity under the old A1 zoning standards. Oversight on our part, a lot of documentation for a civil to have read on behalf of their applicant. They just crossed in the night. We got to the point where the application was finally submitted to subdivide. The new code was in place. The code had to be enforced the way it is written, and that is how this appeal has come before you. I would imagine if it had been described differently prior to the code being adopted, we may not be here tonight. That, in full disclosure, what Mr. Murphy has said is correct. What we are providing to you this evening are the facts to the case and what the applicant would have to go through in order to resolve the matter if we followed just the current UDC provisions.
So I still don't see that there's a hardship not of the applicant's own making. And resolve this through rezoning.
No.
Is that correct that they cannot resolve this through rezoning?
They can,
but it would cost them an arm and a leg.
They have to go back through more boards and more things. So this was the...
It would be a hardship in that regard.
Path of least resistance. It would be the perceived path of least resistance.
This is a little bit less...
A little bit.
Of an obstructed path. The end result is primarily the same.
But there's more public scrutiny in the planning and zoning and city council. Of course there is.
I would like to move to approve that the request that we allow a variance for the creation of lots containing a minimum lot area of no less than half an acre within this tract, this large tract of land.
Tract 1, tract 2, tract 3,
and lot 1, yes.
Lot 1 of McGarry subdivision.
Yes.
Okay.
Second that motion.
I have a motion and I have a second. Do we need to clarify anything?
No, I believe that is that exactly what the applicant has requested? Mm-hmm. So you'd be granting the variance as requested by the applicant.
Mr. Zinner, will you please call the roll?
In the matter of case number 1951 and the motion before you, Ms. Hammond?
No.
Mr. Carroz?
Yes.
Ms. John?
Yes.
Mr. Waters?
Yes.
Mr. Clitheroe?
Yes.
Motion passes. 4 votes in favor, 1 vote against.
If anyone from the public wishing to speak, please come forward. Are there any other items board or staff or legal would like to discuss? Mr. Zinner, I had a question for you before the meeting, and I thought about it. You were working on something when we first started getting together, and you were taking over, that you were going to present to us.
Yes.
How is that coming along?
Well, it's coming along. And I was going to make comment to that under the comments of staff, if you'd like me to address that this evening. We do have rules of procedure change that we will need to be making in order to better align your application scheduling, your application deadlines with the general application deadlines for all of our other projects. We also have technical revisions to your rules of procedure that we will need to make to ensure that they are more in congruence with the new UDC requirements. Given I have had a limited amount of staff availability to render my time toward this, that is why it has taken a while, and couple that with the fact I was out for some unexpected leave and planned leave also. I intend on having that available to you probably at your October, for your October meeting, and working with Mr. Caldera in order to ensure that we have technically met the requirements that we need to meet within your rules of procedure. I would like to present that to you at a work session, which would precede your regularly scheduled October meeting. We have not yet received applications for your October meeting, so at this point, I don't know if we will have any applications. If we have no applications, we would convene a work session at your regular meeting time. If we do have applications, I would like to convene a work session 1 hour earlier to go over those changes, at least verbally provide them to you, allow you until the November meeting to take action, then take action at your November meeting as an agenda item on the revisions to your rules of procedure. Because of the format that rules of procedure are required to now be approved by City Council, your recommendation of approval of those amended rules of procedure would need to go to City Council for their final consent, which we would hopefully be able to accomplish between their second meeting in November and the end of the calendar year. So the new rules of procedure, the new submission calendar deadlines, all would become effective January 1st of 2018. We also had discussed at one point when we were first transitioning to take over the Board of Adjustment from Ms. Amin that we would be providing you staff reporting as it related to Board of Adjustment actions. That is something that Mr. Caldera and I have continued to talk about, and Mr. Caldera has had additional discussion with Ms. Thompson, our city legal counsel. We will probably, between now and your October meeting, I think craft out at least a bullet point list as to what the content of those staff reports will be. There will be a variation between a variance staff report, which would be something new, and what you have historically seen with conditional use applications, which deal normally with telecommunication towers, as well as we have not seen one yet before the Board of Adjustment, wind energy conversion systems. If we do have additional wind turbine type facilities built similar to what's down at Dr. Malacher's Sterling Dental, that would be an item that would come before the board as well. Those were the two prior conditional uses that were retained for the board to take action on, not the Planning and Zoning Commission. If you recall, Planning and Zoning Commission took over the review and recommendation of all other conditional uses, which are then forwarded to City Council for their approval, their final approval. I will be beginning with the Planning and Zoning Commission at their next work session to go back and reevaluate the conditional uses in the code to determine what should remain a conditional use or what should become a principal permitted use with use-specific conditions. So we're going to start working on that with the Planning and Zoning Commission as a separate activity. But for what we need to do with the board, October is going to be your go month, where we will present the material to you. November will be your vote month, and then we will hopefully have your rules of procedure and all of its restructure to become more consistent with the planning and zoning process. So we have one application deadline for all applications. We're advertising all at the same time, and we're doing things that are more in consistent format with what the procedural standards are for the UDC, which is what you are part of at this point, by January of 18. I will probably also be coming to you in November with the application schedule for variances and appeals for 2018 at your November meeting. We do that with our Planning and Zoning Commission. We will just provide you the schedule, the anticipated schedule for those submissions, so you know what the dates are in advance, and you can either block them on your calendar or schedule vacations as you see fit.
Hey, P- Pat, I have one question for you while you're on that train of thought. In terms of any rule proposals that the board would like to see, how do you want to handle that if the board has something in particular that they would like to propose as part of the discussion that will be had later about rule changes?
I would suggest with the five members that are here this evening, which you are our standard membership, if there are changes to those rules of procedure, which I believe you all should have a copy of, if you do not, please let me know and we will get one to you electronically. I would come to the work session prepared with any proposed modifications. We can then discuss them during the work session and properly advertise for those changes within the final public document that we will have to make available for the November meeting. And again, if there are no business items for your November meeting, we will still have a meeting because formal action of the board would need to be taken on those rules of procedure. So it may be a very short November meeting if we do not have any actual board business, but it would be the one item that we'd have to take care of.
So if you're going to present in October, and if we have applications, then that would give you an hour.
That is correct.
Would there be you would probably have something prepared prior to that. Could you send that out?
We so will. It will actually be with our work session agenda for our Planning and Zoning Commission, and we will emulate what we do with the Planning and Zoning Commission. We send out the work session agenda along with the regular meeting agenda, so you will have that a week and a half to 2 weeks in advance.
Okay.
So that's Mr. Caldera's my marching orders at this point is we have to have it to you before I've got to distribute for October, but you will have it in advance. You can react to that and then potentially bring your concerns or your requests for modification to the October meeting.
Over. That's what I'm thinking. So
yeah. And that will help then expedite. Now, I will warn you, and Mr. Caldera may not warn you, he may chastise you. Do not share your proposed changes with any of your board members or any of your alternatives. Please send those changes to me if you would like me to distribute them to the board in advance of that meeting so everybody has an opportunity to see them. We will avoid sunshine law violations and the
but
conduct of a meeting.
If you do that, nobody that you send them to can respond.
That is correct.
Correct.
You need to keep your comments to yourself at that point and let loose during the work session.
Correct.
Just like my planning commission.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. He just took the words out of my mouth.
We want to keep you guys out of hot water. Given your role as a quasi-judicial board, it is extremely important that we obviously maintain transparency and then above board activity with the public meetings laws. But I am always available if you need me. You know where to find me. I will be more than happy to send you whatever you need in advance. We just want to make sure that we have all of these things taking shape. It's coming towards the end of the year. So, as I do with my own planning commission, we may with you folks, we'll give you a Christmas gift. Not a December meeting. So, we hope not to, if we can. But we hopefully be able to take care of all of our business that December may be a month that we do not need to meet and you can enjoy the middle of the silly season, as we refer to it with our commission, without having to come back to us.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner.
I just love being here.
Any other? October 10th, tentative meeting. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Meeting adjourned. Meeting adjourned.